both invisible and visible, one presence, one mind, one power is all. This one that is all is perfect life, perfect love, and perfect substance. I am an individualized expression of God. I am ever one with this perfect life, perfect love, and perfect substance. Oh, okay. That'll wake you up. Well, as many of you know, my day job involves running a studio that teaches music to children and adults alike, and adult children and all of that sort of thing. So I love to do songs that go along with the theme of my lesson for today, which the title is The Works of God. I don't know that that was any shown anywhere, but The Works of God. So we'll figure that out once we get there. How's that? And before I forget again, let me make sure I got the words in front of me. Okay. I can see clearly now the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that made me blind. It's gonna be a bright, 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 bright sunny day. It's gonna be a bright, 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 bright sunny day. Yes, I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is the rainbow I've been praying for. It's gonna be a bright, 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 bright sunny day. Look all around, there's nothing but blue skies. Look straight ahead, there's nothing but blue skies. I can see clearly now the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that made me blind. It's gonna be a bright, 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 bright sunny day. It's gonna be a bright, 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 bright sunny day. It's gonna be a bright, bright, bright sunny day. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Can I unplug now? All right. Thank you, Johnny Nash. I can see clearly now. Such a beautiful day. Can you see clearly now? You sure? Okay. You know, going to test you. You're going to have a test here in a minute. Yeah, gets testy. Because sometimes we think we can see clearly. Sometimes we think, well, you know, I know right from wrong. I know, you know, what you're supposed to do and what you're not supposed to do. And it just kind of reminds me that the story of the woman taken in adultery. Remember that story from chapter 8 of the Gospel of John? And Jesus, they're bringing this woman to Jesus and say, you know, she's an adulteress, you know, and you know what adulterers, they say we're supposed to stone adulterers, and Jesus says to him, says, of course, he says to them, he who is without sin casts the first stone. And a stone comes flying over his shoulder. He turns around and says, Mom! Of course, we know Mother Mary is supposedly conceived without sin, but she was also, you realize that that Immaculate Conception, the that doctrine of the Immaculate Conception, I told that story once upon a time and many years ago when I was still pretty new, and a woman came up to me, we were in a class, and she had a Catholic background, and grown up at a Catholic school, and examined all the Catholic teachings, and was saying, well, you know, the Immaculate Conception actually has to do with Mary. That Mary was also had God as the Father. In other words, she was not born of normal means. And that became the doctrine back in about the 1700s, the 17th century, back in the days when we were just beginning, we had the microscopes, you know, suddenly had microscopes, and we were beginning to observe this process of conception, you know, how the sperm and the egg come together, and they suddenly realized that what they originally thought was that the man planted his seed within the woman's womb, and that then the sprout was totally, you know, from the man's genes. Well, they realized that the woman and the man contributed half, and so they said, uh-oh, Jesus is only half divine. We got to make Mary have been immaculately conceived, so then now Jesus becomes totally divine and totally human. Well, those of us who passed math in the grade school know that makes him only three quarters, right? But, you know, it's an example of the distance, the lengths that conservative Christians go to prove their doctrine and their dogma. And it's not about doctrine and dogma. Jesus was totally divine and totally human, just as you and I are totally divine and totally human. Jesus is our elder brother and wayshower. Some people say Lord and Savior, but I understand that as elder brother and wayshower. Right? He showed us the way. He saved us from having to go through the craziness that we've gone through, but we still do it anyway. Isn't it amazing how we do that? So this story in chapter 8, the reason it relates to this fifth, I haven't been here for a couple of months, so I know y'all, last time I gave you the fourth sign of the fourth miracle in the Gospel of John, and now we're on to the fifth miracle, and I'll get to that in a moment. But this story of the woman taken in adultery ties in to the sign of the miracle, because at the end he says to her, where'd it go? Chapter 8, there we go. And he asks her, says, who condemns you? And she says, no, there's no one left to condemn me, because they all left, you know, after that. And he says, neither do I condemn you. Go and do not sin again. Go and do not sin again. So he's addressing this topic of sin in chapter 8. And a little while later, he talks about the devil, and he says, the devil is a lie and the father of all lies. There is no truth in him, which literally means the devil does not exist. There is no critter called the devil. Right? You know that evil is live backwards, right? L-I-V-E-D-V-I-L. So evil is living backwards, and the devil is when we lived backwards. What does that mean? That means instead of going from within, that awareness of the presence and the power of God within us, we're going from the without and saying, okay, you know, I'm supposed to be like the Joneses, which is kind of funny because I noticed in the program today I'm Matt Jones. I'm not sure how that got happened. My name is Matthew E. Long, by the way. Matthew with two T's. So, you know, keeping up with the Joneses, we got to have, you know, the right house, the right car, the right spouse, the right spice, the right, you know, job, the right bank account, the right investments, the right, you know, vacation home, the right, you know, all the kids have to go to the right schools. You know, everything's out here. That's living backwards, right? When we get our satisfaction from what happens outside of us, then when that's taken away, what happens? There's no satisfaction. I can't get no satisfaction, right? But when we live from within out, when we get that satisfaction from that conscious awareness of the presence and the power of God within us, when we live from that awareness of God, right? Then we have all the satisfaction we need. And the rest of it's just gravy. If we got it, great. If we don't, it's not a big deal. I've had lots of money, and I've had been in a near bankruptcy. Didn't matter a whole lot. It was more fun having money, but you know, I still was living in joy, peace and joy, and serving in the way that I have to serve, in the midst of finances turning south, which it did for a lot of people over the last 10 years or so. So this story of the woman taken in adultery and his talking about the devil leads up to chapter 9. The story of the man born blind, the healing of the man born blind. So this is the fifth of the seven signs. Who remembers what the first four were? There was the water turned to wine at the wedding in Cana. That's the third one, yeah? The first one is the turning of the water to the wine at the wedding. And the wedding is the male and female coming together and creating a new life in spirit, symbolized by the wine. And then we have the healing of the official's son. And the official was a Roman. He wasn't even a Jew. You know, here, this Jewish rabbi healing the son of a Roman. I mean, that was not heard of. Right? They were unclean, they were lesser, you know, the Jews were the chosen people, et cetera, et cetera. And so Jesus is bringing this universal awareness. So it's not just about physical healing, and it's mental healing, it's emotional healing, it's relationship healing, it's the whole, it's bringing all parts of ourselves, not just the masculine and the feminine, but the assertive and the receptive, the, you know, all those different pieces of ourselves, you know, the doubters, the whiners, the, you know, healing all of that. So it's a universal healing that we're talking about, that we're headed towards. And then the third sign was the healing of the man at the pool of Bethsaida, which there was five porches, five symbolizing sense consciousness or materia medica. That was, you know, the medicine of the day. They were practicing, you know, all those latest techniques like, you know, leeching and bloodletting and stuff like that. And Jesus, the spiritual awareness coming into, so working with material medicine, not separating itself out. It's we're incorporating the whole, you know, looking at all aspects of the whole, all aspects of the whole. And then the fourth sign or miracle is the feeding of the 5,000 from five loaves and two fish. So we're taking that five sense consciousness and lifting it up with the two fish to physical completion. And when we recognize ourselves, physical completion, also that creative process, remember the 7 days of creation back in the book of Genesis, that's seven, and there's seven signs in the book, and there's, you know, seven visions in the book of Revelation, you know, there's all this seven having to do with spiritual completion and that process of creation. And so tapping into the substance of God, bread symbolizing the substance of God. And that brings us to this fifth sign, where we have a man who was blind from birth, and the disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Quick note here. How could the man have been sinned, you know, be the cause of him being born blind? Can you, you know, does the infant in the womb, you know, in the fetus in the womb sin somehow? I don't, you know, don't quite understand that. So he's talking about, and off, you know, the disciples, "Who do you say I am?" And he says, you know, some say you are Elijah, come back. So we see this reincarnation, this idea of past lives and karma, you know, that we're paying for the sins of the past coming through the disciples, you know, this worldly understanding. And Jesus is saying, says, "No, it's not that this man sinned or that his parents sinned, but that the works of God might be made manifest in him." So how often do we sit around and say, okay, whose fault was it? Right? Who did it? Was it you? Did you do it? Was it your fault? Wasn't my fault. Had to be somebody's fault. Well, it's not about whose fault it is. Doesn't matter what's happening. Okay, I made a mistake. I sinned. I fell short, you know, the glory of God. So what? You know, we've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Yeah, we're not God. We're not, you know, we are expressions of God. We have that potentiality of God within us, and we're having this human experience. And the nature of the human experience is trial and error, right? two steps forward, one step back, three around the corner, you know, one more over the top, and we're there. There you go. So this idea of who sinned or whose fault it is not in a spiritual living, in a spiritual awareness consciousness, is not relevant. It's not relevant. You know how many, you know, we talk about learning from experience and, you know, okay, you know, if I'm ever in that circumstance again, I'll know what to do differently this time. You know what? We're never going to be in that circumstance again. You're never going to be in the same exact same circumstance again. And so every situation is different. If you look at the healing miracles of Jesus, he never does the same thing twice. Sometimes it's a distant healing saying, you know, he's healed, go and, you know, check it out. Sometimes he, you know, puts clay on the eyes and says, go wash it off. Sometimes he says, pick up your bed and walk. It's never the same. It's never the same. It's all about being in the moment with what is. And the only thing that is the same is whether we go with the spiritual guidance or we go with our own intellectual understanding or we go through with our ego desires and wants and needs. Those are the choices that we make. And often it's just a matter of taking a breath and saying, I relax, I let go, I let God's good come forth. That's my favorite affirmation. That's, you know, use that on a daily basis, you know, who knows how many times. Every time I face a choice, every time, you know, I have to make a decision, I relax, I let go, I let God's good come forth. And then remember that I am the light of the world. That God in me is that pure awareness and guidance and light and love and all that greatness. And all that, and when I make connection with that, then I have that experience of expressing greatness. That I can do the works of God. When I'm connecting with that consciousness, conscious awareness of God, or being in a consciousness of spiritual awareness. It's all about consciousness. Life is consciousness. Ever heard that before? I just want to make sure I'm in the right place. So life is consciousness. So it goes on here. It says, it's not that this man sinned, but that the works of God might be made manifest in him. And so he spits on the ground, makes clay of spittle, and anointed the man's eyes with clay, saying to him, go wash in the pool. He went and washed, came back seeing. And then, of course, the guy has to go to the temple because that's kind of how their religion works. You know, you go to the temple and you get yourself declared clean because when you're blind and, you know, or deformed or whatever, you're not clean. And so they have to have himself declared clean. So he goes to the priests and they go, who are you? You know, you're not the guy who was born blind, you know. So he gets his parents and they pass the parents. Is this guy, you know, and they say, hey, I don't know. All I know is this is our son. He was blind and now he sees. And then later on, the man comes and they ask him, you know, about Jesus and says, you know, trying to get him trapped into saying that Jesus is the Messiah. And he says, I don't know. One thing I know, though I was blind, now I see. Sound familiar? Though I was blind, now I see. You ever heard of Amazing Grace? You know, John Newton. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound, etc., etc. I once was blind and now I see, or, you know, but now I see, or and I always say and now I see instead of but, because, you know, whenever you say but, you're negating what you just said, right? I love you, but, you know, we're negating what we just said if we use that but. So, and now I see. I was blind and now I see. Now, that story of John Newton, how many know the story of John Newton, who wrote this Amazing Grace? He was a slave trader. He ran boats of slaves from Africa to the West Indies. And somewhere along the line, he got some religion and realized that what he was doing was a sin to God and man. And he repented. And he actually became a clergyman in England. And he was instrumental in overturning the slave laws in England, which they overturned them in England long before we did here in the United States. And he's the one that wrote this song, you know, I once was blind and now I see, you know, a sinner like me. I've got to start at the beginning. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved, saved a wretch. I can't even think of the word anymore. I always say soul. Saved a wretch like me. I once was lost and now I'm found, was blind and now I see. You know, you can really feel the words when you know the history behind the song and the history of John Newton, how he came to that. Just imagine ourselves when we've come to that awareness, when we realize, whoa, I'm doing something that, you know, or I'm not doing what I should be doing. Right? The sins of omission are as much as the sins that we commit. It's not, you know, our job, as Charles Fillmore, co-founder of Unity, as he talks about this, he talks about sins of omission and commission, and he says, in this whole chapter that Christ is declaring, that's not the one I wanted to read, I got ahead of myself. When man fails to apprehend his mission and to do the work of bringing forth the good that is allotted to him, he remains in darkness. Remember, blind and now I see, healing the man born blind. When we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing, we're blind. It's kind of like the eight limbs of Raja Yoga. You all know those, right? It starts out with the first one is Yama, and then there's Niyama, which is basically stop doing what you're not supposed to do and start doing what you're supposed to be doing. That's the first two limbs of Raja Yoga. If you're not doing that, then there's the rest of it is beyond you, you know. And then they get into the asanas and the breathing and the right thinking and meditation, contemplation and meditation. And then you get the last eighth limb is Samadhi, which is we'll talk about a little bit more later on, but it's absorption into that Holy Spirit or into the Infinite Spirit. So when we do that, which is what we're supposed to be doing. Okay, his blindness. Okay, when man fails to apprehend his mission and to do the work of bringing forth the good that is allotted to him, he reigns in darkness. His blindness is that sin of omission, which is present in every man who does not realize his place in the Godhead. So that's our mistake. That's where we have missed the mark. That's what the word sin literally means, to miss the mark. That is our mistake, to not live up to our potential. So when Jesus is talking about sin, who sinned, this man, or etc., go and sin no more. It wasn't about sin, it was about doing the works of God. And if we're not doing the works of God, then we're missing the mark. That's what Charles is saying here. We're missing the mark. And we have that opportunity to hit the mark, right? It's not about what we've done. It's not about what we've done, it's about what we haven't done. We haven't lived up to our potential. And that's the possibility, right? The Christ within, that holy, perfect pattern and potential for expression of God in this world. That's one understanding of the Christ. Christ being that's the Son of God. We are all sons of God. God is our Father, right? That's what Jesus gave us in the Lord's Prayer, our Father. Not my Father, although he does sometimes say my Father. He also sometimes says your Father when he's talking about God. Our Father. To recognizing that connection with God. And so, along with the seven signs or seven miracles in the book of John, I've also been sharing my seven S's of spiritual living. Seven S's of spiritual living. And it began with synchronicity. Remember that synchronicity? Meaningful coincidences. Keeping our eyes out for meaningful coincidences. Students of A Course in Miracles will know that the number one principle of miracles is that they're natural. They're always happening. If we're not seeing them, we're missing something. Right? Miracles are natural. Meaningful coincidences. Things are happening all around us and for us. God is, you know, things are happening for us. We think sometimes things are happening to us, you know, and nothing's happening right and all that, etc. If we recognize that everything is in divine order and divine timing, then we can see the synchronicity. We can see, oh, okay, well, this is why I got into that fender bender, right? We may never know exactly why, but sometimes we go, oh, you know, there was a bridge that collapsed and we would have been driving over that bridge, or, you know, or I would have gotten to where I was supposed to be on time and I would have actually missed the person I was supposed to see because they were, you know, late or whatever, you know, who knows for sure why things happen? We just have to know that everything is happening in divine order and divine timing, to recognize that synchronicity, if you will. That's God's way of maintaining anonymity, is synchronicity. Meaningful coincidences. And then we have synergy, right? Synergy, where two or more are gathered in my name, therefore so am I. And Socrates, yes, Aristotle, excuse me, said it this way. He said that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. That the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. And that's why we come together as churches and clubs and groups, you know, is that we can do more together than we can separately. And recognizing that as a spiritual principle, a principle of spiritual living. And the third one has to do with synthesis. Synthesis. It's a big word. But basically you have thesis, antithesis, synthesis. Right? Thesis, antithesis, synthesis. So for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So the more that we realize that those two are working together in order to bring us to a higher level of living or of being. So every time I run into resistance, the more I fight it, the less I am able to overcome it. So the only way to overcome or to is to go through or to incorporate that antithesis into my thesis and create a synthesis. So when two people have two different opposing ideas, when we say, okay, where are we, you know, where do we coordinate? Where do we overlap? How can we work together? How can we both, you know, what is the main thing that we are, you know, we can usually find that we all want the same thing and we end up with a greater level of expression than we would have if we'd have gone with either the thesis or the antithesis. Happens in churches all the time, although then we end up with these groups that keep butting heads because nobody wants to think that they're, you know, nobody wants to change. We say, well, I'm right and you're wrong. Well, we got to get past and right and get past right and wrong and get to how can we work together? You know, how is this lifting us up to a greater level of being? So that's the synthesis. And then there's simplicity. The fourth one is simplicity. Keep it simple, sweetie. Right? Keep it simple, sweetie. If it's complicated, how many times, you know, people say, well, I really know what, you know, this is the answer. We're going to do this, and then that's going to happen, and this is going to happen, that's going to happen, this thing, and then we'll be here. Well, no, we keep our eye on where we're going to be, and we just say, what's the next right step? What's the next right step? It's not about knowing the whole plan all the way to the end, although we might have some ideas, but can we agree upon the next right step? The next right, and we may not even have exactly the same end goal in mind, but we know that we are in the same ballpark, right? We all have this same belief and desire to express God in our lives, and yet we don't. But can we agree on the next step? We may not be able to agree on step 2, 3, 4, and 5 yet, but can we agree on what's the next step? And then once we've taken that step, we can say, okay, what's the next step that we can agree upon? Keep it simple. Keep it simple. Truth is simple. It's not complicated. The more complicated we make something, the more that it's ego-driven, the more that we are edging God out, EGO, right? Ego-driven. The more we're ego-driven, the less God's involved. So that brings us to our fifth S, right? Okay, I did four, right? Good. Synchronicity, synergy, synthesis, and simplicity are the first four. And the fifth one is serendipity. You ever heard of serendipity? You know, if you were if you ever went to Church of Today back when Jack Boland days, I know that he was a big advocate of serendipity. And that word serendipity comes from an ancient tale. It goes back at least to the 17th century, but there are actually roots back in like about 1,000, 1,200 in some Persian tales that was brought to, I can't remember if it's French or Italian or anyway. But the princes of Serendip, there's three princes of Serendip. And these three princes go off on adventures. And to make a long story short, that they serendipity literally means that it's a way of finding valuable things not sought for. A way of finding valuable things not sought for. So in other words, they went off on just to have an adventure, and then these adventures brought them riches and fame and fortune, et cetera, et cetera. And they weren't seeking that, but it came to them as they were open to what was out there. And that's the way it is for us, serendipity. Our lives, you know, in spiritual awareness, spiritual living, it's about serendipity. It's about not knowing what's going to be there, but knowing that it's for the great and good of all. So when we're working with an awareness of God as our source, right, we're seeing those meaningful coincidences. We are working together synergistically and seeking that synthesis, keeping it simple. What's the next step? We realize a greater vision, a greater expression, a greater realization of God in our lives than we would if we weren't following these simple paths, these simple truths. We get that serendipitous experience of drawing to us great good beyond what we could conceive of. All things happen for us all the time. Make room for the unexpected. Make room for the unexpected. We all, those of us who plan things out, we've got the day planners and the calendars and, you know, everything, you know, everything is, yeah, there's a couple of us around here, you know, always have a line of unexpected good, you know, unexpected good, right? Make room for the unexpected. If a lot of people are, you know, I'm too busy, I don't have time to pray. Well, put it in there, you know, make a priority. Make it a priority. Say, okay, from 10 to 11, I'm praying. You know, meditating and praying, and keep that appointment. You know, make an appointment with God and keep it. That's what Charles Fillmore did back in the early days when Myrtle had experienced her healing, and he was starting to say, hey, there might be something to this prayer stuff. You know, he was the businessman, the scientific, you know, he saw this happening. He was going to put it to the test. So he did. He put it to the test. He showed up. At 10 o'clock every night, he set a date. He set the date with God, and from 10 to 11, he sat in the silence, and for 6 months, nothing happened. You know, it was kind of like, oh, this is okay, but you know, but he kept it. You know, and Merle just kept encouraging him to do it. And then one day, he was a real estate broker or whatever, and one day he's filling out the paperwork for this transaction, and he has this flash that he had dreamed about this particular transaction. He had actually seen himself doing this in a dream, and he had written about it, so he knew that, you know, that this was real. And he started realizing that God was speaking to him in dreams, and so he would keep his prayer date, and then he would, you know, he was more observant of his dreams. And then he started getting to the point where he was, many people will tell you, if you read Charles Fillmore and you can't quite grasp what he's saying. Some people have difficulty with it. Try meditating first. Try getting into an awareness of the Spirit guiding and directing you and living in and through and as you, and then open up Charles Fillmore, because he often wrote out of meditation. And so these words have a depth that we can't get with our logical mind quite often. So to get out of that logical mind and get into the spiritual mind before we start reading Charles Fillmore, and it becomes more, we get more aware of what's going on there. So throughout this chapter, as I started to read earlier, Charles Fillmore says, in this whole chapter, the Christ is declaring, I am the light of the world. When our blind, stumbling thoughts awaken to the reality of the Christ, darkness falls away and we see clearly. I can see clearly now the rain is gone, right? We can see clearly. Once that darkness of doubt and fear fall away, we can see clearly that God is guiding and directing us in ways that we can't even conceive of in the midst of our darkness. And so that's our affirmation for today, to take home with us, if not nothing else, to take home this awareness that I am the light of God. Take a deep breath and affirm with me. I am the light of God. And a second time, like you mean it, together. I am the light of God. And a third time, soft with deep meaning, together. I am the light of God. And so it is, and so it shall be. Yea, God. And amen, and God bless. Thank you all for being here. Amen.